So tonight, continuing with Elul, I want to discuss, you know, we've said how every single month has its Shevet. Based on the Arizal, there's a Shevet that corresponds to each month, and the Shevet of Elul is Shevet God. Shevet God is a Shevet that really we know very little about. I did a little research. The actual individual God, I don't think there's anything about him. We know he was born, we know who he was, and that's about it. There's no stories about him in the Chumash, in Midrashim. I'm not really aware of anything about God. Yeah, I mean, right. We know about this. That's part of the Shevet. I'm talking about the individual, the person. Yeah. We know nothing about. The Shevet we know a little about. It's not a very commonly discussed Shevet, but there is some information about Shevet God that we can discuss. But God is connected Elul, and Elul, as we know, is a very important month. So there must be something about God that really fits the month of Elul. So the question is, what is that? Now, God's, I guess, greatest trait that we know about is God was known as great warriors. They're supposed to be very strong. They would be victorious in wars. They'd be able to fight the enemies and really eliminate their enemies in a very, very easy way. Their degel, every Shevet had a degel, had a flag, and their flag had on it pictures of weapons. So they're known to be fighters. That's who they were. The name God itself is from the term gedud, which means a troop. That's the bracha they got from Yaakov, which is the first thing here. God gedud yegudenu, which seems to be a tongue twister. God gedud yegudenu, but it uses the word God with gedud, which is a troop. You know, the troops will attack them, and then they will drive the troops back and defeat them. That's who God was. So we see God's all about success in war. They're fighters, they're warriors. Their flag was weapons, and their bracha was about fighting. So what does that have to do with Elul? That's question number one. Also, we know about God that they're the ones who had the idea to settle Eber HaYarden. We know that at the end of the Sefer Bamidbar, Reuven and God came to Moshe Rabbeinu, and they requested, we don't want to go into Eretz Yisrael proper, we want to live over the Yarden. And we have a lot of flocks, there's a lot of land over there, we'd like that spacious land for our flocks to graze upon, please give us the ability to stay over here and not have to cross over the Jordan and go to Eretz Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu at first was not happy with the request. Number one, he thought they were going, it's because they were scared of Eretz Yisrael, like the Meraglim were. And number two, he said, you're going to cause all of your brothers, all the other Shvatim, to be nervous about crossing over. And then he even attacked them for their use of the language they used, because they put their flocks before their children. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, no, your children obviously are more important than your flocks. So the quest was not taken so happily by Moshe Rabbeinu. But they made a deal, and the deal was that they're going to still fight across into Eretz Yisrael. They're going to lead the Jews into battle. And the truth is, the Rashbam says that they returned last from war to protect the Jews from the enemies who might trail behind. So they went out first to fight in the front lines, and they came back last to make sure everyone's protected. So ultimately, they're the ones who led the Jews into battle into Eretz Yisrael, even though they settled across the Yarden. They left their wives and their kids and their flocks there, and all the men went to fight the wars. And they became really in the forefront of the battlefield, and they were the ones who were able to overcome the Canaanim, and they were the ones who protected us from any, you know, pursuers after the fact. That was Shevet God. The bracha Moshe Rabbeinu gives God, it says, Baruch Marchiv God. Blessed is the one who expands God. And Rashi explains that God's border was actually near the border of Eretz Yisrael, meaning that, or the border of the Shvatim was where God was. He was at the very edge. So if any enemies came to attack, God was there to protect everybody else. So again, God is there as this warrior, ready to protect Klal Yisrael and to attack all those who came to attack Klal Yisrael. This bracha of Gedud Yegudenu, as we mentioned, this is the first one on the sheet here, if you look at it, God Gedud Yegudenu Vu Yagud Akiv, which many Mepharshim explain in different nuances, but ultimately it means that God will be attacked by an enemy troop, and they will then drive them back, Akiv, like on their heels. They'll drive them away and kill them. So then it Siv explains that God was so powerful, what they would do is that they would allow the enemy to attack. If they saw enemies approaching, they would remain passive. The enemies would come to attack. And then once the enemies came to attack and approached them in battle, God would then wage a counterattack and overpower them. So they kind of baited them in. You know, if you want to attack us, go right ahead. And they were so powerful, they could let that happen and then fight back and be victorious. So much about battle and wars and fighting. doesn't seem like an idea which really fits Chodesh Elul. What is it about Chodesh Elul that should fit this idea? So we mentioned last week, and I wanted us to go back to this point. You know, our greatest battle that we have is not with external enemies, it's with our internal enemy. The battle every Jew fights, so we have our external battles, but the hardest, the longest, the most difficult battle is the battle we fight with our Yetzer Hara. That is the battle a Jew has to fight day in and day out, every single day of his or her life, a constant battle. I mentioned last week Mesilas Yesharim, and I'll just read you the quote this week. Yeah, I brought it with me. Mesilas Yesharim, in the very beginning of Mesilas Yesharim, he talks about Chavos Adam Be'olamo, person's obligation, their duty in this world. And which happens to be, I think, one of the most important chapters of any sefer any Jew could read. It's if you've never read Mesilas Yesharim, at least read that first chapter. It tells you what your duty is in life, what you're doing here on this planet. Very important thing, obviously. Hope I have it here. But he describes there, here it is. He describes there the battle a Jew has with the Yetzer Hara. And the way he describes it, he says, Hashem places the human being in an environment where those things that drive us away from serving Hashem are abundant. There's many things that draw us away from Hashem in this world. And that is taivos achumrios, those are material desires, material pleasures, the physical world, that if we get drawn after it, we become distant from the ultimate true good. So here comes the line. V'nimsa, so it turns out, Shumusam be'emes b'sof mechama ha'chazaka. The human being is placed, in truth, into a difficult war, a harsh war. We have to fight a battle. Ki kol anyan ha'olam, because all matters of this world, bein l'tov, bein l'mutav, whether they are good or they are not so good, hineihim nisyonos l'adam, all of them are challenges for us. Whether a person is wealthy or poor. Wealth is a challenge, because it says in Mishle, pen espa, maybe I will become too satiated, v'chichashti, and I'll deny Hashem, v'amarti, mi Hashem, and I'll say, who is Hashem? Or it says, maybe, pen ivar, maybe I'll be poor, and I'll steal. So we know that wealth could be a challenge, and poverty could be a challenge. Tranquility is a challenge, and difficulty is a challenge. War is a challenge, and peace is a challenge, everything's a challenge. So Mesilas Yesharim says, achinim says hamelchama elav, the war is fighting us, on all fronts. You know, there's a war in front of us and in back of us. There's a war everywhere we go, because no matter what we're doing, Hashem gives us a challenge to deal with. That's life. That's what life is all about. So Mesilas Yesharim uses a very appropriate mashal, which is life is a battle. It's a battle against Yetzer Hara. So then he says, if a person is a valiant warrior, and can be victorious in all the battle fronts, huya adam Hashem, this person will be the complete person, the perfect person, Asher Yizke Li Davik Beboro, that will be Zochet to cling to his or her creator. So we have to fight this battle constantly and overcome the Yitzhahara and the challenges we have on all sides. So that's the mashal given by the Mesilas Yesharim. Now to take it to another mashal, and let me say mashal, but another description. The Chavos HaVavos, I mentioned this last week as well, but I just want to go back over it now that we're talking about it. The Chavos HaVavos also gives a very similar analogy to our battle with the Yitzhahara. And he says, Ben Adam, he says, you, human being, Alecha l'das, you should know, ki asone hachi gadol, the greatest enemy in the world, who Yitzchak is, the Yitzhahara. And Yitzhahara is constantly there to fight us, to challenge us, to pull us away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu and doing what's right and appropriate in this world. And then he tells, later on, he says, Im tizarim, if you're careful of the Yitzhahara, and you go out to fight the Yitzhahara with the proper weapons of your mind. You know, our weapons are not going to be a knife and a sword and a gun. The weapons of the Yitzhahara are going to be our using our das, our bechira, willpower, self-control. But if you do that, he calls it neshek sichlecha, the weapon of your mind. The salak es chitzav me'alecha. And you remove your arrows, but use your mind. Tinatzo, you will be saved. Timalat mimenu bezos Hashem's barach. You'll be saved from him. So you still have this metaphor to a war. Then he says, "Al kain al tatri oschaf mechama b'sros chuscha mechama siyitzer." So even a physical war should not distract you from this war. Unfortunately, times we have to fight physical wars, but that can't take us away from our ultimate goal, which is fighting this battle within. Vayasik oscha afkrav. Even a battle should not disturb us from our avoda of fighting Yitzhahara. And the truth is, you know, the Jewish camp when they were at battle, it was a makom kadosh. It was a very holy place to be, which we'll talk about more later on. But even if you're at battle, you have to fight the battle, understanding that my ultimate battle is inside, not on the outside. And then he says, there's a story of a tzaddik, shepagash pam anashim. He once greeted people that just returned from war. And they were excited, they were celebrating, because they just defeated their enemies. So the tzaddik said to them, Adayim muktam lechem lismach minitzachon. You're celebrating prematurely. Why are you celebrating so quickly? Yirapam lechem akatana nitzachtem, because you've only won the small battle. You still have the big battle to fight. So they asked him, what's the big battle? What do you mean? And he said, it's fighting Yetzirah. That's what he told these returning troops who are celebrating their war victory. And it's all this idea that when we talk about a battle, so God certainly was a tribe that were tremendous warriors and could win in the physical battle. But obviously there's a deeper spiritual meaning to that. And what that means to us, the reason they're given this is the bracha from Yaakov, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu. These great people saw this as the greatest trait in God. So it's a symbol to us that God didn't just fight the physical battles, they're able to fight the spiritual battle as well. So the message really is found in the Mishnah and Avos. In Pirkei Avos, we have the famous Mishnah, Ezehu Gibor. Who is the true warrior? Hakovesh es Yitzro, the person who's able to overcome his or her Yitzhara. That's the true warrior. And it's based on a pasuk. It's a pasuk in Mishle. I'll read that to you as well. I have this, it's not in the sheets, but I have it here. The pasuk in Mishle says, I'll find it in my stack. The pasuk in Mishle says, Tov erech apayim mi gibor. Somebody who is patient is greater than a warrior. Umoshel baruchos, somebody who can rule over his or her desires or moods or instincts, is greater than a lochid ear, than somebody who captures a city. And that pasuk sums it all up. Because, you know, as difficult as it sounds, it's easier to fight a physical battle than to wage a spiritual battle. People who are extremely powerful and can capture cities can't hold themselves back from eating an extra piece of cake. You know, people can do tremendous things in the physical world, but they have no self-control, willpower when it comes to things which go beyond, you know, the physical. So we have to know that the greatest thing to conquer is our own personal desires, our own Yitzhar. That's the greatest thing to conquer. So Elul is the prime battlefield for this. The month of Elul is the time where we're supposed to be grappling with this concept of the Yitzhara. All year long to fight the Yitzhara. Elul is the time where we have the unique task and ability to do it. I mentioned last week we have the Rosh Yitevos of Elul in the Pasuk, Naflu Oyvechem Lifnechem Lacharev. If you rearrange those letters, it spells Elul, which means your enemies will fall before you by the sword. And we said, who's your greatest enemy? As we said, it's the Yitzhara. So this is the month where the battle against Yitzhara is at its strongest. And we have the greatest ability to succeed if we try during this month. So the greatness, the power of Sheva God at war is obviously indicative of something much more spiritual, much deeper. And that is the ability to defeat the Yitzhara. And it could be, this is my own personal thought, but it could be the fact that Sheva God lived across the Yarden, outside Eretz Yisrael proper, is because they were strong enough to handle the struggles that were out there. You know, all the Jews in Eretz Yisrael had the Kedushas Haaretz there. They had all the other Jews around them. They were kind of isolated across the Yarden. God, they were kind of, with Reuven, they're isolated on their own across the Yarden. It could be, even though they had external challenges being over there, God had the internal ability to overcome those challenges spiritually. So they're placed, so physically they could overcome the battles, and spiritually could overcome the struggles that they had. And that's Sheva God. So that's one point about Sheva God, which is very relevant to Elul, to daily life, really, and we should be inspired by Sheva God to understand who our true enemies are and where our battle really lies. So that's one point I want to make. But there's a deeper point as well. Because in what way does God demonstrate defeating Yitzhara? I mean, now we said God is very powerful, and God's able to defeat the Yitzhara because they're great warriors at battle, and the greatest battle we have to fight is within ourselves. So there's a deeper point over here. Again, based on the Sefer Yetzirah we keep referring back to, that discusses each month and what corresponds to each month. So the other point about Chodesh Elul, which is mentioned, is it says that in Chodesh Elul, the letter Yud was crowned in action, which you refer back to the chart I gave out last year. So the chart said that Yud corresponds to Elul, the letter Yud, and the action of Elul is actually action, Maisa, right? So the yud is the letter, and the action of the month is acting, maisa. And then it says in the human body, it's the left arm. That corresponds to elul. So we have to figure out the yud, maisa, action, and the left arm. What do those have to do with anything when it comes to elul? So the left arm is unique in halacha because the left arm is where we place our tefillin. Right, so the left arm corresponds to where tefillin goes. You put tefillin on the weaker arm. The typical person is righty, goes in the left arm. The truth is, in halacha, a lefty, halacha refers to the right arm as their left arm. It sucks about it. It's small d-day. His small is really his right. So left just means the weaker arm. That's what it means in halacha. Who here's a lefty? Anyone lefty here? We have a lefty over here. Okay. Yeah, so your left arm is called your right in halacha, and your right is called your left arm in halacha. That's how we look at it. So I want to look back at these brachos given to God. That's on the sheet in front of you. I have one over here. So if you look at the bracha Moshe Rabbeinu gave to Shevet God, this is the second thing quoted on the page here from Sefer Devarim. It says, God Amar, Moshe said to God, Shevet God, Baruch Marachiv God, blessed is the one who expands God, Kilavi Shachin, God's able to dwell like a lion, I guess the security, because they're such great warriors, so they can defeat all the enemies around them. And this is Vitaraf Zroa Afkad Kod. They'll tear the arm along with the skull. It's a pretty gruesome description. And Rashi, look at the next quote here. Rashi tells us, what does it mean they tore the arm with the skull? Harugeim Hayu Nikarim. People they killed were actually, you could recognize who God fought in battle and killed. Why? Because they would Chulchim Arosh Imazroa. They'd cut the head along with the arm in one fell swoop, Mak Achas. So it's funny, it's a gruesome description. And this is something Moshe Rabbeinu pointed out about God. Like Moshe Rabbeinu says, you guys, you're so strong, you can tear off the skull and the arm in one shot. What's Moshe Rabbeinu seeing? Like, why is that so important? Why is that the bracha given the Shevet God? In the final book, the final parts of Sefer Torah, that's what we talk about. And to us it sounds just vicious. You know, take your sword, it's one shot, and tear the whole person in half like that. Well, so what does it mean exactly? Obviously there's deeper meaning to this. So the Vilna Gaon says an incredible thing about this. Vilna Gaon says that when you talk about the arm and the skull, it's a reference to tefillin. Right? Tefillin go on the arm and on the head. And he says that, what's the reference to tefillin over here? There's a halacha that when one puts on tefillin, you're not supposed to interrupt between the arm and the head. To put tefillin on your arm, you put it on your head without any interruptions. You shouldn't talk in between, you shouldn't take a break, you should go straight from the arm to the head, and that's the halacha. So the Vilna Gaon says, number one, when you say they would take the arm with the head at once, it means that they were careful in putting on their tefillin. They wouldn't separate between the tefillin shel yah and tefillin shel rosh. They would do it in one shot, no interruptions. That's one thing he says. And then he continues and he says that the Gemara tells us, and I think in Masechta Sota, we know there's a concept of the Kohen Mashuach Mochamba. When they went out to war, a Kohen would get up and he would say, okay, whoever just got married, you should go back home. And whoever just built a house, you should go back home. And whoever just planted a vineyard, you should go back home. Don't go fight the war. And it says, Hayarav Racha Levav, if somebody who is scared and has a soft heart and you can't handle the war, you should also leave. Mm-hmm. And Chazal tells us, what does that mean? So it means someone who's scared of the Averus in their hands. We're not talking about people who are scared of battle, but somebody who says, you know what, I'm a Balavera, I've done some bad things. I don't think Hashem is going to take care of me in the war. And I think I will be a liability to Klal Yisrael because I'm a sinner. So that person should turn around and go home. And then the Gemara says something very funny. Even if the sin that he had was interrupting between his arm tefillin and his head tefillin, he should go home. That's the Gemara says, the same halacha. So as if that something, you know, at war, this is a very significant thing. That if you put on your tefillin the wrong way at war, it's a liability to Klal Yisrael. So that's the example given, and it fits very well, because Shevet God, we know, they were considered the warriors of Klal Yisrael. So they had to be sure that they fit, you know, the bill of what a warrior or a Jewish warrior is supposed to look like. And Jewish warrior had to be a tzaddik, and even to the extent that they never messed up putting their tefillin on, interrupting between the arm and the head. So that's what the Vilna Gaon says. But if we just pause here for a second, things kind of are starting to come together. The month of Elul corresponds to the left arm, which is the arm that the tefillin goes on. God are warriors. It says they tear apart the enemy from the head, from the arm and the head together, which the Vilna Gaon means. They put on their tefillin shel yad and shel rosh together without interruption. And that's something the Gemara points out needs to be done to be an effective warrior. So that all kind of comes together as one now. It's pretty amazing. What does this all mean? What does this mean? Let's take a deeper idea. What does it mean to us? Like, what does all that mean? So, talk about tefillin. So, speaking to women, they don't put tefillin on, but the concepts still apply. So, whether or not you put tefillin on, I always say for women, whether or not you do that mitzvah, the concept of the mitzvah still applies to you. You know, it just, you don't have to actually do it, but the concept still applies. So, what's the concept of tefillin? So, the tefillin shorosh, one thing it represents is your thoughts. It's on your head. It means your thoughts are bound to Hashem. Right? You tie it on your head, your thoughts are bound to Hashem. The tefillin shel yad, yad stands for actions. Your arm is your act. That means your actions are bound to Hashem. So you have two things. You have the tefillin is symbolic of your arm, of your actions, and your thoughts being bound to Hashem. Now, if we were to think about it, when we talk about then what's our challenge we have very often with the Yitzhara. So one very common challenge is that, you know, my head tells me what's right, but my body just doesn't do it. You know, I know what's right. I know what I should be doing. My thoughts, they're bound to Hashem. But when it comes to my actions, I just can't take control. So I'm interrupting between my arm and my head. You know, I know that Lashon Hara is wrong, and I know I shouldn't say it, but my mouth just says it. But I know it's wrong. I know it's wrong. It's not that my head's in the right place, but my mouth is saying the wrong things. Now, Chazal tell us that Esav's head is buried in Maros Machpelah. Right? If you go there, when I was there a few years back, there's actually a sign. You know, it says Esav's head lies here. But, you know, somewhere down the ground. You know, we have some assurance Esav's head actually lies in Maros Machpelah. So why is his head in Maros Machpelah, not the rest of his body? Because Esav, it could be that his head was on straight. You know, literally. Like his head, he had the right thoughts in his mind, but he had no way, he couldn't do the right thing. He did the wrong things. He couldn't control his actions. But it could be his head was in the right place. So his head got to Maros Machpelah, but his body didn't make it in there. The Avos and Imahos, you know, their heads and their actions were all doing the right thing, so they all got to be in Maros Machpelah completely. Based on his head made it in, it's not his body. But some people have the opposite problem. Some people, they might do what's right, but their head is not with them. You know, in their mind they say, I don't know why I have to do this, I don't like it, it doesn't make sense to me, I'd rather be doing something else. But their body, for every reason, they do the right things. So we have both issues, that when our mind and our actions are not in line, so that's a big cause of Avera. And the truth is, I would think that's probably the most common cause, because usually, most people do have a sense of right and wrong. I think you can say that most people in the world. We don't always do right, but we know what's right and wrong. And the answer is because even if our minds are in the right place, we have no control over our actions, and that's our problem. We hold as an ideal that action should be a result of our thoughts, meaning we want to be able to think the right things and then bring them out into action. And that's the symbol of tefillin. I shouldn't interrupt between the head, the arm and the head. I should make sure that my actions are my arm and my thoughts are my head are bound together. There's no interruption between the two. If there's interruption, that means that something is out of line. Either my arm's out of line or my head's out of line. Other interesting thing about tefillin is that you're supposed to put the shel yad before the shel rosh. And that corresponds to nasa v'nishma. That's that we do, and then we understand. It's our action, and then it's our thoughts. So, because the primary thing in Yiddishkeit is always the action. That has to come first. Even if our heads are in the wrong place, we do the right actions, we still get a lot of schar for that. Other way around, we don't get as much schar for. If our heads are in the right place, we do the wrong things, then the main thing is the actions. And if we don't do the actions right, then we're in trouble. So that's the idea of tefillin. Now, when it says in the Sefer HaYetzirah, it says that the letter of the month is going to be Yod, and in Elul, Hashem crowned the Yod in action. So we have many sources that Kabbalistically, in some way, the letter Yod represents thought. The first letter in Hashem's name, Yod Kei Vav Kei, is a Yod, which is the initial plan, the thought, which is brought out to action. That's Yod Kei Vav Kei. A Yod is just one little dot, which is kind of like, it's above. It's kind of like a hovering thought. That's a Yod. So it says that during Elul, Hashem crowned the Yod in action. It means that an Elul is a month where one's able to take that thought, the Yod, and bring it out into action, to make sure that our minds and our actions go together. So very often, Averos come from the fact we can't align our thoughts and our actions. That's a big challenge that we have. So it could be a person does the right things out of rote, out of routine, or doing it because they want honor, or they do it thoughtlessly. So the head's not there, but their actions are there. It could be the opposite way around. So one of the biggest avodas of tshuva, when it comes to Elul or trying to do tshuva, one thing I think all of us have to work on is to make sure that our mind and our actions, they link together in some way. because in our minds we know what's right. Let's just get our body to do it and we'll be in good shape. The problem is that our mind says, don't do that. Our body says, but I want to do that. And then our body wins. So then that's where we have problems. So if you want to take it back to Shevet God once again, now God's ability, it says, Taraf Zoro Afkar Ko, they're able to take the arm and the head together. Right? So what does that mean? On a spiritual level, so that means like tefillin, and it means that they're able to align their thoughts with their actions. The arm and the head went together. There's no interruptions between the two. And for Elul, that's a very, very powerful lesson for us, because so much of our Baal Tahara is not what's right, it's that how do I do what I know is right. That's one of our biggest, I think that's probably our biggest battle for most of us. Especially people who are, you know, from, and they know what they're supposed to be doing, the issue more is just how do I get myself to do it. That's usually the issue. So Shevet God represents tefillin, represents fighting this battle. They show us that, well, the way to fight the battle is to try to align the thoughts along into the actions. So it's interesting because in the Torah, and the way that wars were won was not based on the weapons. That's very clear. And we had a couple weeks ago in the Parsha spoke about what the Jewish, you know, war camp looked like. And it's very interesting because, as I mentioned before, the Mashiach Muhammad, this Kohen, came and he threw out anybody who was a Baal Avera. That's number one. So somebody who was scared of his Averas wouldn't be there in the first place. He'd go home. So we're talking about Tzaddikim. And then we know that the Pasuk, we have a Pasuk, V'hayim Machanech HaKadosh, your camp shall be holy, refers to the camp of the soldiers at war. It's refers to. And from that, there's no Tumah there. Certain types of Tumah were thrown out of the camp. You have to be Tahor. And we learn a lot of the halachos that when you have to have a clean place for davening. People have to dress appropriately. You can't have things that smell bad around. You can't have dirty diapers around. We learn that from this pasuk when it comes to the soldiers at war. And that's a funny place to learn about davening from, soldiers at war. But the answer is no, because the soldiers at war in the ideal Torah army, these were tzaddikim who would spend their time at war davening, doing mitzvos. They'd fight the battle as well. But it was an extremely holy, pure camp. We know there's a mitzvah in the Torah that they had to all have a special shovel on their belts, so they use the bathroom and cover it up to keep the place clean. And that's, you know, soldiers are very, very careful of what they carry with them. You know, they don't want to take extra rations because it's too much weight. They have to travel, they have to camp, they have to hide, they have to run. But there's a mitzvah to have an extra shovel. You know, you go tell a soldier, take an extra shovel with you. They're going to say, I have this huge backpack and I have all my food. Like, how can I take an extra shovel? But they had to have a shovel because they had to make sure that the machane stayed clean so they could daven. And they could have a special makom kadosh to get Hashem's help in the war. Because when it comes to war, ultimately, what wins the war? We know it wasn't the weapons they had, wasn't their swords, but it was the help from Hashem. Because it says Hashem, He's the one who's going to be in your camp to save you from the battles. And that's the way the soldiers fought. So, and that's for us as well. We have to realize that the way that we win, the way we succeed in life, is not going to be based on the weapons we use. It's based on how kadosh hatar are we. That's help us succeed. And the truth is that the war camps that they had, it was a makom tefillah. That's what it was. You learn the laws of tefillah from those camps because the soldiers were constantly davening to Hashem to succeed. So this is another aspect of Shevet God and how they fought the battle of the Yitzhara. There was one other point about Shevet God I want to talk about. The third point. It's a little different point now. This is from a different part of the bracha to Moshe Rabbeinu. From Moshe Rabbeinu, if you look back at the bracha, so it says, "This is looking back at Sefer Devarim, is the second pasuk, Chaf Aleph." It says, "V'yar Reishis Lo." So he saw that the Reishis, the beginning, was to him. Kisham Chelkas Mechelkeik Safum, because there the portion of the lawgiver was hidden. And this refers to Moshe Rabbeinu's grave was somewhere in Shevet God's land. We don't know where. The Torah says we don't know where. But we know it was in Shevet God's land somewhere. So Shevet God was zochet of Moshe Rabbeinu's kever in their land. Vayese Rashi Am, the heads of the nation came. Sikas Hashem Asa, he did the righteousness of Hashem, the Mishpatav Yisrael, and the laws with Yisrael. So it's a confusing pasuk, but I want to focus here on three words. Sidkas Hashem Asa. He did the tzedakah of Hashem. So what does that mean exactly? What does it mean that he did the tzedakah of Hashem? And the truth is, right now, we're talking about their portion, which is Ivra Yarden, which we said Moshe Rabbeinu was happy with them originally. Moshe Rabbeinu berated them and said, how dare you make this request? You're going to scare the rest of Klal Yisrael. You know, you care more about your sheep than your family. But now Moshe Rabbeinu is praising them, and Moshe Rabbeinu is saying that, you know, that they saw their portion, and Moshe Rabbeinu got buried there himself. And it sounds like, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu is happy with what's happening right now, that they're across the Jordan. Why is that? So the Netziv, this is the last quick quoter here, Hamek Davar, here's a fascinating thing. And this is something actually found in a sefer from Rav Moshe Eisman, is one Rabbi Neri Yisrael. He has beautiful, many, many beautiful books he wrote. So he talks about this point. He says, this is the Netziv, Sikas Hashem Asa, it says, this is a very bottom source here, that God did the tzedakah for Hashem, righteousness for Hashem, tzedakah for Hashem, Masha Asa Yishu B'makom Shai Roi Lios Chariv. God settled a place that would have been destroyed, that would have been barren, empty. V'utzidkas Hashem, and this is tzedakah for Hashem, hachafetz b'yeshuvo sh'aras, it desires the land to be settled. So that it's the way he understands this pasuk, he's saying that the fact that they settled across the Yarden, that was actually an act of tzedakah for Hashem. They're giving tzedakah to Hashem by doing this, meaning this is something that shouldn't have been settled, and they voluntarily settled it, like tzedakah, it's like a gift, and Hashem is happy with this. Hashem wants the land to be settled. So it's an interesting thing, because Moshe Rabbeinu didn't seem to be happy with this originally. It seemed to be a bad request, but now we're praising the request and saying that this is a tzedakah for Hashem. This is something done for Hashem that Hashem was happy that we did for him. It was tzedakah. It was like we went out of our way to please Hashem. So how did this work? So the answer seems to be the following. And even though it was Reuven and God, in the pasuk, God was listed first. I mean, God initiated the request. And what it means is that God understood on some level that this land is supposed to be settled. I mean, Moshe Rabbeinu said, we're all going to cross the Jordan, we're going to settle Eretz Yisrael proper. And God had some sort of inner intuition, inner feeling to say that, no, this land across the Jordan, Hashem wants us to settle it. Even though there was no command to settle it, God, through his intuition, through their own intuition or their own personal understanding of Ratzon Hashem, they said, we feel that this land Hashem wants settled. And at the end, Moshe Rabbeinu seems to agree to that and say, yeah, you're right. That's what Hashem wanted you to do. So you find that Shevet God has this special sense of intuition that they're able to see beneath the surface. The command said, settle Eretz Yisrael. And they said, there's something deeper here that we're supposed to do. And they figured they're supposed to settle every yarden as well. You find Divrei Hayamim that when David HaMelech was still being pursued and he was being persecuted by Shaul and having all sorts of problems, the people who came to support David HaMelech are Shevet God. So they had some sort of intuition that this person, even though right now he's downtrodden, he's a fugitive, he's despised by many around him, we should support him. And God had this, Shevet God has intuition that they sense there's somebody special here who's going to do a lot for Klal Yisrael and we're going to go and help him. And it says over there that Shevet God came and they attached themselves to David HaMelech. So again, you find that Shevet God had this special like sixth sense. They're able to see that even though things here don't look like on the surface they should be done, we're going to go and do it because it's the right thing to do. So they protected David HaMelech, they settled Eretz Yarden. We know that Eliyahu Navi descends from Shevet God. We mentioned this last week. And the truth is there is some machlokas. Maybe he was, it seems to be in some Gemara saying he's a Kohen. Somebody saves from Shevet God, so there's a little bit of confusion as to who he was, but certainly many sources say he's from Shevet God. So Eliyahu Navi, as far as we know, will descend from Shevet God. And Eliyahu Navi's job is a very similar idea. Eliyahu Navi comes to us at a point of history where we're down, and we're waiting for Mashiach to come. And his job is to prepare us for Mashiach. So what does he do? His job, we talk about him being Mavasar. He comes and announces Mashiach's coming. So what does that mean? When you announce something to somebody, what you're doing is you're trying to pull out their hopes from within. You know, it's a funny role. He's supposed to come and make announcements. Like, just say Mashiach already. Why do you have to announce to me? The answer is, when you come and announce the Mashiach is coming, then what you've done is you've taken me from being in despair to having hope. So you can see there's something deeper in the person. These people, they're downtrodden, they're sad people, but I'm going to tell them there's an optimistic future here. And they're I'm going to pull out their hopes and make them excited for Mashiach to come. So Eliyahu Navi, Shevet God, have this ability, again, to sense there's something deeper within that I'm able to engage in these people. The men of God, they left their families for 14 years to conquer Eretz Yisrael. That was their deal with Moshe Rabbeinu. You know, we're going to leave our families behind and we're going to go fight the battles with you. And this, and why was that? Because this was a certain sense of sensitivity, because they went beyond the condition. The condition was you go and you fight until the land is conquered. They actually stayed until everybody was settled in. They could have gone home. Once the land was conquered, they could have gone back home. But they said, no, we're sticking around until everyone's settled. Everyone has their tribal inheritance. Everybody's happy. And then we're going to go back home to our land. Because they had a certain sensitivity. They're able to see deeper into people and understand this is what people need. So the Shevet God had this, well, again, we'll call it a sixth sense, this special intuition to see things that were deeper beneath the surface. That's what they did. So what exactly is it that the house that relates to Elul? How we relate this concept to Elul? I think it's also very important. You know, when we do talk about tshuva, what is tshuva saying exactly? What's our expression of tshuva? Tshuva is saying that even though on the surface I might be doing X, Y, or Z, within myself there's a pure neshama, there's good, and I know that I could pull out the good from within. If we didn't see good within ourselves, then we wouldn't think about tshuva, because I can't do good. I have no good within. I can't do any good. Tshuva means that I understand there's good within myself. There's tov deep down the person. Sometimes I do things which cover up that tov, and on the outside maybe I look like I'm not doing the right things. But there's a way to sense the fact that within there's some tov over here. The same way God can say that Eiver Yarden, it looks like it's land that should belong to Goyim on the surface. But they're able to say, no, there's good which is in the land of Eiver Yarden. And even though Moshe Rabbeinu did not command us to settle it, we sense the good here. We're going to go and we're going to settle and bring up the good. You know, we have within ourselves a lot of good. We don't really sense it. But the goal of tshuva is to say, when there is good buried beneath the person, we're going to bring out that good. And that's the whole idea of tshuva. Even when Hashem says, I'm going to give you kapara, you're going to get tshuva and I'm going to give you atonement. It's because Hashem says there's good within which could come out. That's the idea. If we were just rotten inside, then even the atonement would help us because we're all rotten. But Hashem says, no, everything that you do is only on the surface. The fact that maybe you do averus and you might have issues with a bad midah or keeping a certain halacha or having kavana and davening, whatever the issue might be, Hashem says, that's all on a surface level. But deep down, there's something very pure and pristine within, and as soon as you get rid of the outside, I'll find the good on the inside. So Shevet God and Chodesh Elul, on a much deeper level, they represent the fact that we are able to sense good beneath the surface. I think that's something which all of us have to see more within ourselves. All of us have good within. And a lot of times, our issue with Tshuva is that I don't think I can actually improve that area. I think that's something that's such a struggle that I have, I just can't do it. But if we know, no, inside of us is good, inside of us is Tov, inside of us is our pure neshama, of course we can do it. We just have to dig within and find it. If there's nothing beneath the skin, if we were just hollow and full of rotten, you know, evil, so then there's no room for tshuva on anything. But it's all this potential within that allows us not to despair. And if we could just kind of dig under the bad things that we do, and you know, our bad midos or the things we're trying to improve, and tap into the true potential, that's what Elul is all about. Elul is to find within the goodness and bring it out. That's what Elul really is. I've spoken about before when it comes to Yom Kippur. So Yom Kippur is a lot about, it's certainly about tshuva, vidui, improving ourselves. Yom Kippur is a day of the neshama. Yom Kippur is a day where our goal really is just to tap into our neshamas. You know, we try to become very non-physical, very spiritual. We don't eat or drink or wash or anything like that. We spend the day in intense davening and tshuva and vidui, all these things, because it's a day on the calendar where we can say that I can feel my neshama, I can sense my neshama in some way. The rest of the year, our body covers it all up. In Kippur, we try to dig down and pull it out. What happens when you pull it out? When you pull out the neshama, that means you sense in yourself there's so much good, there's so many, such motivation, there's aspirations to improve and become better. It's all there. We just have to tap into it. So it's not always about, you know, what can I do on the outside, it's about finding it within myself on the inside. And that's what Shevet God was able to do. Shevet God was able to say, we see David HaMelech. On the outside, he is a fugitive. On the outside, he is hated and despised. Even back when he was a child, David HaMelech, you know, his father thought that he was born from born from a bad relationship. He was rejected by his brothers. He was little and scrawny, and nobody saw good within him. But Shevet God said, this person that everybody rejects and doesn't like, we see the good within. And he became David HaMelech. That's who he became. Shevet God said, this land that belonged to Sichon and Og, that was these people who were Roshayim, and this land that belonged to these Goyim, which Hashem's never to conquer, we sense there's good here, and we're going to conquer it. And at the end, Moshe Rabbeinu said, "Tzedakas Hashem Asoi," you did the right thing. That was tzedakah for Hashem. Tzedakah means that you weren't told to do it, but you do it anyways, because you feel it's the right thing. That's tzedakah. If someone has a need, and they don't say you must do this, but you do because you see the need. So Hashem, God said, "Kevayachol, Hashem has a need, and we sense Hashem wants this done. Hashem didn't command it, but even so, we're going to do it." That happens to be a bigger lesson about Hashem. You know, for all of us, avodas Hashem very often is, you know, things I have to do, I'll do. Things I don't have to do, I'm not going to do. But we have to flip that around sometimes. That our job is not just to check off the boxes, you know, yes, yes, yes. Our job is to please Hashem. Now you picture a relationship between husband and wife. So if it's just I'm performing my duties, well, that's not much relationship. It has to be that we're here to please each other. There's a love, there's a relationship, and we want to do make each other happy. So even though maybe on my list it didn't say, you know, no, you must buy me ice cream tonight. But you buy ice cream because you want the person to be happy. So you have a certain level of sensitive intuition to say that that will be a nice thing to do tonight. And you do it, and that makes the person very happy. So in avodas Hashem as well, if we look at it as a relationship here, my job is not just to do what Hashem commands, but I have to have some sense of intuition and a sense to know what is right based on the Torah. What does Hashem want me to do? Not just what I have to do, what does Hashem want me to do? Well, please Hashem. And that's a different approach to Yiddishkeit. Shevet God said, okay, well, we have to settle Eretz Yisrael. That's a command. But we sense that Hashem wants a Vayarden settled. So we're going to do it Hashem wants, despite the fact he didn't say we had to. And then that's a big part of Avodas Hashem. It says, Chaviv and Divrei Sof from Yosef Minyan Shel Torah, that the words of the rabbis are dearer to Hashem than Torah itself. So nothing is more important, it's more dear to Hashem. Why is that? Because when the Rabbanan give us a mitzvah, Hashem said we had to do that. Hashem said, you didn't have to do this mitzvah. And the Rabbanan said, no, we sense Hashem, this is what you want us to do. So it's the idea of using your intuition and sensing from Hashem, not what we have to do, but what we should do. Hashem never commanded us to make Chanukah, or Purim, or any mitzvahs to the Rabbanan. But the Rabbanan said, well, this is what Hashem would want to happen. So we're going to go out of our way and make a new mitzvah or a new halacha because this is what Hashem would want. And that's the Rabban using their intuition to please Hashem. So Hashem says, that's very dear to me. Because you're not just doing what I tell you have to. You're trying to go out of your way to please me. And that's very, very special. So Shevet God went out of their way to please HaKadosh Baruch Hu in that sense. Back to Shevet, to Chodesh Elul. Chodesh Elul, I think the connection is that we're trying to find within ourselves that there's a deeper part of ourselves which is covered up sometimes. And Shevet God had a very keen intuition to sense things beneath the surface. And that's why this, the same exact bracha says, Kisham chelkas mechokek safun. It says that the portion of the lawgiver was hidden there. So that's like Moshe Rabbeinu. They were zeichet of Moshe Rabbeinu buried in their land. And I think it's a very appropriate mashal, because the idea of chelkas mechokek safun, it's the concept that there's something buried beneath the surface. Something so holy, so pure. Moshe Rabbeinu, the holiest, most pure person to ever walk the face of the earth. He is buried beneath the surface there. We don't know where it is. And we don't know where Moshe Rabbeinu's kever is. But Shiva God has him there because they're the ones who are able to sense the good beneath the surface. So in their land, you have Moshe Rabbeinu, who is that good beneath the surface. That's who he is. So it really fits very much their midah. So just to recap. So Shiva God, number one, is a warrior. The wars, so they fought physical wars. You know, the Mikra Kipshuto was they fought physical wars. But on a deeper level, they're ones who succeeded in spiritual battles. And the true enemy, as the Chovas Avavos says, is the Yetzer Hara within. That's our worst enemy. And their success on the physical battlefield is indicative of their success in the spiritual battlefield. It's like we said, that the Jewish army, they succeeded because of their tzidkus, not because of their weapons. So they had that ability as well. Number two, they stand for the concept of tefillin, which is not interrupting between the action and the thoughts. And every soldier needed that. That's what the Gemara says. And they're the ones who stood for that value of making sure their thoughts and their actions were in sync. And number three, they had this special intuition of seeing good beneath the surface. And for Elul, these are all big jobs of us, of ours, to work on. Number one is to fight that battle. Number two is that one of the main parts of the battle always is, we know what's right, let's do what's right. I know what to do, but how can I do it? And always the time for those practical plans. Okay, I know what I need to do, let's work out a practical plan so that my actions really follow my thoughts. And that, I think, is the hardest thing. You know, this, you approach Yom Kippur, and we all know what we want to change. But the issue usually is, well, but how do I do it? Like, I know I want to do X. I know it's right to do X. I need to do X. It's important for me to do X. But what's the plan? Like, how do I come out with a quote-unquote battle plan to perform X? And that's always the challenge. But Shavuot, God had the ability to say that I can take it from my mind, from the thoughts and plans, into reality. And that's what they were able to do. And then the final point of Shavuot, God, was this intuition. Tshuva is based, the whole concept of tshuva has a premise. The premise is that people have good within. If there's no good within, then tshuva can't exist. There's good within. We at times cover up that good with bad actions or bad midos or avirus that we do. But if you could sense the good within, that helps you to pull out the good and overcome the evil. And God had that sense, intuition. They were able to sense good underneath the surface. And that's the idea of Shem Chalkas Mechokek Safun, that Moshe Rabbeinu's grave is buried, hidden among Shavuot God, because they're the ones who are able to sense good beneath the surface, so they were zocha to have the ultimate good of Moshe Rabbeinu buried beneath their surface. That's God. So if you ever don't know about God, this is good.